Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast. As truthful as resources permit, my name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
Hello, and my name is Jazza, and I, for the first time in a long time, was thoroughly tempted by a Conservative policy today. Do you know what that was, Jimmy?
No, but I'm sure you're going to enlighten us.
Oh, I will. So, Boris Johnson pledged £550 million for grassroots football and a bid to secure the 2030 World Cup. I'm not so interested about the former of that, but I'm very interested in the latter, because other than channeling my nationalism through the medium of song, obviously we all know how Jazza feels about the Eurovision Song Contest. My second favourite thing is channeling my nationalism through the medium of sport, and I'd bloody love it if we actually hosted a World Cup in my lifetime. That'd be great.
I mean, we have hosted World Cups, but then not football ones.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it would be really great. One of the great travesties of the last 10 years was us not getting the 2018 World Cup bid because Russia bribed some people. But you know, whatever, you know, I was tempted by this policy, strongly tempted by this policy, wary of the fact that they said that people would be 15 minutes away from a great football pitch wherever they lived in the country on average.
Yes,
and I was
on
like, what kind of average are you talking about there? Is it a mean, a mode, or a median? Excuse me, Conservative Party? Because those are very different things. But then I remembered that I voted to remain in 2016, and all I want for Christmas is you.
Wow, you're the first person to ever make that pun. Incredible
scenes. It's definitely not. I know. The crowd does go wild. I voted to remain. And look at us, me and Jimmy, we get on.
Wow, to a point. I don't want to overstate it.
Yeah, let's not lean into it. It'll make us feel awkward. We are British after all. This week, it is the last episode that we are going to do before hashtag GE2019. Are you excited, Jimmy?
I'm very excited. I'm hoping that by the end of this episode, our listeners will know who to vote for if they haven't already decided. I think we can provide that service.
Do you know who to vote for yet?
I've already voted because I had to do a postal vote because I'm actually away on election days.
Oh my God, hold that thought, and we'll reveal it after the break when we ask people for money on Patreon. Oh, very exciting. We're going to be talking about what has been happening over the past few weeks in the election campaign, some of the standout and key policies that have maybe tickled our pickles, and then revealing how we're probably going to vote.
Yeah, let's do all that.
Excellent.
If you enjoy what we do at this here podcast, you can support us by going onto our Patreon account. Jazza, where can they find our Patreon account?
Patreon.com/RightDishonourable. Well,
just Google Patreon Right Dishonourable. So there you can just
help us keep the podcast going. Christ, you're bad at this.
I'm so bad at it.
We need to say thank you to all of the people who are pledging to us on Patreon. It's very kind of them, isn't it?
I love that you just pulled out this true.
Absolutely terrible.
That's why we make you do it.
Right, so thank you to Andrew Kilpatrick,
Bence Ugray,
David Warner,
Emerson Spots,
Gemma Cumming,
Jono.
Oh, and Ollie McGregor.
And Matt. You missed out Matt.
I missed out Matt and Matt. Sorry,
you're,
Matt.
You're also bad.
So yeah, okay, good. Yeah, but dyslexic, so I have an excuse. You don't.
So, Jimmy, for you, what has been the maddest part of this campaign?
I think the maddest part of this campaign is the whole premise, which is that a lot of people are still going to be ostensibly voting on whatever Brexit outcome it is that they want, and yet we're also electing a government that could be in power for the next 5 years. And I know I'm still opposed to having a second referendum for reasons previously stated, but it does seem slightly mad that we're being asked to you know, choose these two things that are not necessarily linked, depending on, you know, your voting persuasion.
That sounds like the rationale of somebody who could be talked over to a people's vote, Jimmy.
Well, I think we voted the first time, and I think it was clear enough what outcome people wanted. It was then down to MPs to decide what exactly that looked like in praxis. And they've failed to do that among themselves. I don't think any one group is to blame per se, but between the, you know, the hard Brexiteers, the soft Brexiteers, the soft Remainers that respect the vote, and the Remainers that don't respect the vote.
The al dente Brexiteers as well, love the al dentes.
Yes, yeah, all of the different types of Brexiteers and Remainers, they've decided not to come up with a decision, so they're throwing it back to us. And, you know, whoever wins or fails to win this particular election, it won't really settle the argument around Brexit, because people vote for parties for reasons that are not related to Brexit.
Yeah, I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to vote Conservative and then regret voting Conservative. have you seen any of their YouTube adverts that have been floating around?
I don't know if probably. I mean, I've seen a lot of the political advertising via Twitter this time, which wasn't as prevalent, at least on my feed, in the 2017 general election. I've seen a couple of the Tory adverts, but I've seen way more Labour adverts for some reason.
Oh, how interesting. I've seen almost exclusively Conservative campaign.
Interesting. I mean, the Labour ads, some of them are amazing, I think, in terms of pure advertising. I'm not saying that I'm persuaded. I mean, I haven't been persuaded to vote for them on the base of those ads, but it's kind of incredible how advertising online has come along in the last few years. And I guess you have to credit Momentum, at least partly, for that in Labour's case.
Yeah, Momentum have done a very, very good job, I think, actually. Doesn't mean we agree with them, but you can marvel at their marketing prowess.
The Tory one I have seen is the one where it pictures MPs arguing.
How it's seeped into our lives, and how the only way of being able to stop it is to get Brexit done, and then everyone will stop arguing.
Yeah, which seems unrealistic on its own terms, but also what struck me about the advert is how diverse the MPs were compared to the composition of actual Parliament, which is largely filled with middle-aged white men.
Especially of the Conservative. It's such a tempting premise of just they have managed to, more than anybody, sell the idea and the dream of just make this all stop by getting it done. And I think that's been very clever, because even I have been very tempted by stopping everything and just going, like, you know what, there you go, Boris. There you are.
At this point, I don't think any vote really stops any of this. Because if the Tories get a solid majority or even a working majority, they'll manage to push Boris's deal through, and then we enter further negotiations, and we're going to be in that situation one way or another for the entirety of the next Parliament at the very least, and probably longer. If we have a second referendum through like a coalition government or something similar to that, then we'll have that referendum. Either Leave will win, which, you know, means that you then have a Labour-led government, presumably, that has to implement a result that fundamentally it doesn't want. Or you have Remain wins, and I don't think that really closes off the argument either, because even if you personally think that a second referendum is legitimate, there's a lot of people in this country that won't feel that way and feel that they've been cheated, which I think is a reasonable feeling. But, you know, one way or another, this argument is not going away. However plausible the Tories' argument is.
At least that means that we're still going to be able to have a podcast.
I don't know if you remember, but we actually launched this podcast before Brexit was...
We were just normal politics.
And if it all went away, we could continue on our quest just to discuss stuff in a reasonably bland, centrist way.
Yeah.
Alas.
Only. that is the dream. My favorite kind of like... you went for quite a deep analysis of the whole premise of this election when I asked what the craziest part of the campaign has been. I enjoyed that, Jimmy, very, very well.
I was going more for the lol kind of thing. There was no kind of like Jeremy Corbyn high-fiving a boob this time.
Oh, God, yeah, that was brilliant. Totally forgot about that.
It's one of my favourite pieces of media that have ever been produced, accidentally or otherwise. I was thinking of, like, when I think of just like weirdness, do you remember Lily Allen posted a TikTok reacting to the Labour manifesto?
Where she was crying, yeah.
Yeah, where she used a quite famous filter on TikTok that simulates crying.
Oh, so she wasn't actually crying then?
No, it was a filter, Jimmy. How did you not know this?
Because I actually didn't see the video, I just heard about the video.
So this is the thing. It then got reported everywhere as Lily Allen legitimately cries at the launch of the Labour manifesto. And it's a TikTok. It's like it wasn't real, and it was reported as fact. And it kind of gave us a look into kind of the dystopian future that we're going to end up having.
I mean, I think it gave you a look into the hectic speed at which journalists are expected to produce stories where they can't even watch a video that they're writing a story about.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody who had actually watched the video would have noticed that not be real tears. It also kind of made me worry for the future when deep fakes become a thing.
I think the whole argument about deep fakes, which it's basically really, really good video software that can simulate a real person saying or doing something as if it was properly filmed and actually legitimate. It'll end up being, as the printed word is now, you end up not trusting something just because it's written down. You end up trusting it because it comes from a source that is trustworthy. Same as with Photoshops and everything else, really. So really, you know, for all the haranguing about deep fakes and, you know, faked audio and that sort of thing, it just brings that kind of media into the same situation that the printed media is now. So I don't really see that it makes much difference, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm not expected to believe any of the publications that reported Lily Allen crying over the manifesto in the future, am I?
I think that publications are trustworthy on different subjects, but that, mm-hmm. that probably comes from the point of view of being a journalist. So, like, you know, if the Guardian writes up someone, you know, accuses somebody of racism, I take that with much more of a pinch of salt than if, say, the Times does, because the Guardian is much more sensitive to alleged racism than the Times is. You know, equally, if the Guardian criticises Jeremy Corbyn, that in some ways has more weight than if the Telegraph criticises Jeremy Corbyn. So it's all about people's biases, and it just means that you have to be somewhat sensible in the way that you consume media. But, you know, people already don't trust journalists all that much. So I'm not sure. The deep fake thing is a development that we're going to have to get used to, but I don't fundamentally think that it makes too much difference. I mean, you already have the experience of... this actually does relate to something else crazy that happened in the campaign. I don't know if you saw this video. There was a guy from an Israeli advocacy group. I think it is actually called the Israeli Advocacy Group. Who
beautifully named. Great SEO.
Yeah, great SEO. But also means that you're not one of those shady think tanks that is just called something generic and bland and, you know, good sounding.
like the People's Congress or something.
Yeah, you know, the Center for Good Stuff. So this guy, anyway, he went out to speak to some left-wing protesters, and he said, he pretended that stuff that Jeremy Corbyn said was stuff that Boris Johnson had said. So he said, like, Boris Johnson has been accused of, you know, hanging around with known anti-Semites and sharing platforms with them and calling him his friend. Is he fit to stand for office? And obviously they all said, oh, no, Boris Johnson shouldn't stand for office. And then he flipped it round at the end of the video and said, actually, that stuff that I said Boris Johnson said is all stuff Jeremy Corbyn said. And you've obviously said that you think that would invalidate somebody standing for office. So do you think the same about Jeremy Corbyn now? And it was hilarious how it was motivated reasoning in action. So as soon as people realized that it was their guy, not the opposition guy, they immediately started making excuses for him.
But that's the thing that just makes me so bloody depressed about this, is the polarization and the confirmation bias across the whole of not just like the media, but the electorate. Like it just makes me really bloody sad. I did see there was today there was a campaign video from Boris Johnson of him going around in the like a subtle dig at Jeremy Corbyn and the anti-Semitism row, where he went to it looked like a Jewish part of North London, and he went to like a bakery, and a load of old Jewish men came up to him and saying, "My son just turned 18. He's going to vote for you." I'm like, I don't know if you can speak for your son. but it was like basically parachuting Boris Johnson into as many Jewish people as possible. And I was like, I understand why this is happening, but also this is very dirty politics.
Is it dirty politics, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be annoyed if Jeremy Corbyn were doing the same thing and like parachuting himself it was literally just like a throng of Jewish people around him, and it was so obviously meant to be kind of like this call for the Jewish vote. It just feels really gross, and I feel like that whenever somebody kind of like co-opts a minority or like a group of people for their electoral gain, because Boris doesn't really care, does he? He's just getting one up on Jeremy Corbyn.
I think Boris is fundamentally only interested, or almost only interested, in remaining Prime Minister.
In Boris Johnson. Yeah.
I'm not sure I would say he fundamentally cares, but I'm sure there's plenty of Conservative activists and MPs that do genuinely care about Jewish people and their prospects. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Yes.
That's you can be overly cynical about these things.
I've just been hurt by the last like 6 weeks, Jimmy. Leave me.
I mean, I feel like the campaign, even though we were expecting a general election, I mean, we haven't expected one ever since Boris Johnson became Prime Minister, basically. Mm-hmm. The campaign itself seems to have largely passed me by. I've sort of vaguely been keeping track of it, and I've read bits of manifestos and that sort of thing. But you know, I don't know, it's felt like less of an event for me than the 2017 general election. I'm not really sure why that is, or if that's something you'd agree with.
I would actually, I'd probably agree with that. But I feel like part of it's like the begrudging nature of people going to the polls at this time of year. It's also the fact that it overlaps with the fact that literally everybody is doing their Christmas shopping and going to the Christmas parties and things like that. We're busy doing other stuff at this time of year. Mm. And so I think that doesn't help in terms of kind of focusing the mind. And so much of it is like, it's just the same beats, the same assets, the same kind of like things that we saw such a short time ago, like two and a half years ago, that there doesn't seem to be, I don't know, so much has changed, but really in terms of like the way that everything is organized and the way that we talk about things hasn't changed very much at all. Everybody has just become more and more ingrained. I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. It has felt like less of an event.
So we were actually talking before we started recording this about my experience that a lot of my friends who previously have not shown much interest in politics seem to be engaged in this election and also seem to be very, very angry about what's going on. Generally, they're angry with the Conservatives, I have to say, although there mm-hmm. are some people that are angry with Jeremy Corbyn or even the Lib Dems. And you said you had a similar experience in that respect.
Yeah, so I have quite a politically engaged group of friends anyway, but I have people who have over the last year gone on their first kind of like protests, people who have really kind of become activists almost accidentally, who have never even really, who the only democratic thing that they ever did and the only engagement with politics that they ever did was voting however often we were asked to vote. But whereas now people are incredibly well informed, people spend an awful lot of time actually like poring over the detail of documents and like expecting certain behaviors from politicians, and like when the manifestos came out, people were like comparing the economic policy of the Lib Dems and the Conservative Party and saying that, oh well, the true Conservatives are now the Lib Dems and stuff like that. And things that I just like were never, I've never really experienced, and I don't think actually I don't know. Was it like that in 2017? I don't know. I feel like I'm giving two different perspectives. In one way, the campaign has kind of passed me by, but the people who are being asked to vote, like the normal people who I usually go down the pub with, seem more concerned about it than they did maybe a couple of years ago. But maybe that is just me. How do you feel?
I have exactly the same experience, to be honest with you. So I suppose the 2017 campaign, the pivotal event in that was Theresa May's performance on the campaign trail, and particularly the U-turn around the so-called dementia tax, and then her saying that nothing has changed seemed to be like the quote of the campaign, and then obviously it was all downhill from there and she ended up losing her majority. Whereas I think partly because Boris Johnson has eschewed some of the television, well, the Andrew Neil interview anyway, he's actually participated.
It's specifically
in the
Andrew Neil one, isn't it? Yeah. How do you feel about that? Because I'm just like, what a wuss. But it's clever, it's smart, and obviously, if anybody is going to hold Boris Johnson to account and make him look stupid, it would be Andrew Neil, and because he is the attack dog of the BBC now, and he is a very good interviewer. He can make anybody stupid. The BBC itself looks quite stupid here, because what they should have done is filmed all of the interviews and then put them out one by one.
Yeah, that's probably what they should have done. And you know, maybe with the hindsight of having this experience, that's what they'll do next time. I suspect that, you know, they were probably led to believe that Boris Johnson would participate in an interview at some point, and then you know, that never transpired in the end.
And so then they went psych.
Yeah, pretty much. I'd guess that's what happened. To be fair, Boris Johnson has actually gone to the debate, but to me that is actually a fairly good, fairly emblematic of the fact that actually having audience questions is a less good way of scrutinising somebody than having just a well-informed interviewer who's willing just to go at, you know, have a go at the candidate for half an hour. Although some people did comment that, I can't remember which debate this was, but the audience was actually being quite aggressive in some of the debates. They were not shying away from asking pretty pressing, even rude questions about the candidates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was obviously very cynical that Boris Johnson refused to actually be interviewed by Andrew Neil. But, you know, on my feed at the time on Twitter, there were so many Corbynites just getting really butthurt about the fact that Corbyn had been scrutinised and Johnson hadn't, which...
It is, like, wouldn't you be as well? Like, that is the ultimate slap in the face.
Yeah, but I mean... it is slightly unfair, but at the same time, you know, if your candidate has serious problems, I think it was sort of agreed that Corbyn had the worst interview of any of the leaders that were interviewed by Andrew Neil. You know, he had a bad interview because there's a lot about him that's very unconvincing. And you can complain about that as an activist, that, you know, the Conservative candidate didn't get the same treatment. That's a legitimate complaint on one level. But on another level, Corbyn had a terrible interview because he's a bad candidate. So I think you, from my point of view, you kind of had to suck that up, really. But yeah, I see where they're coming from.
So that's Jimmy's feedback. If you feel butthurt about it, suck it up, Corbynite.
Well, yeah, you know, it's just, it does suck, but like, well, I'm just repeating myself at this stage.
That's life, kids.
Sometimes it is, you know. I think the way that you know, the media actually, the way the media, the mainstream broadcasters handle general elections is quite wanting in some respects. I mean, I think Question Time as a format and as an election format, which is slightly different, I think it's not very good for scrutiny. I think the Andrew Neil interviews are much better. So
I kind of remember in 2010 there were, I think, four interviews with the leaders, and it wasn't so much interviews, it was kind of like presidential style debates with David Cameron
and Ed Miliband,
Gordon Brown, and
you're thinking of 2010.
And Nick Clegg, who I will always agree with, and they felt like much more of an event then, because they were the only time really that they were being scrutinised. Whereas since 2015, there have been so many different formats that have just been barraged onto our screens of audiences or town halls or one-on-one interviews or panel debates being thrown out as kind of like the televised campaign in the run-up to an election, that they kind of, I feel like they dilute one another to a certain extent, and I feel like they're becoming less and less effective. Whereas in 2010, I feel like it was so, it was much more of kind of like a pivotal point. It was also the first time that we'd ever had kind of prime minister candidate debates in the run-up to an election, right?
There was a novelty to it, which I think is why it had such an impact, definitely. And they, as you say, they have experimented with different formats. To be fair to the broadcasters, they have been quite well watched, I think. There have been millions of people tuning in to these things. So whatever misgivings I personally have about the quality of them, clearly other people don't feel the same. So I'm sure we'll continue to see them. I think it's Yeah, go on.
No, so more people watch. This is a useless fact, but I've started, so I'll finish. The more people watched the Jeremy Corbyn interview than the final of X Factor Celebrity.
My God. Only X Factor Celebrity, though. So
It has been the worst X Factor for years. Is there anything, is there any particular manifesto that has stood out to you the most? There's obviously like the Greens, who are they want to invest a ton, like it's $100 billion every year on decarbonizing the economy. They want to have get rid of tuition fees, a universal basic income, which was the biggest kind of like standout, I think. But they were pretty standard, right? The main thing the Greens have achieved this election is the fact that there is a commitment to a zero carbon economy in every single one of the manifestos of the main parties, right?
Well, I'm not sure I would put that down to being a green achievement, but you're right that that is something that appears in all the major manifestos. I think it's probably a lot more to do with Extinction Rebellion. To be honest, I think Extinction Rebellion seemed to have actually generated more media coverage in the last year than the Greens have throughout all the time that I've been following politics.
That's fair.
So, which, you know, has been about a decade now. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the Greens are going the furthest with it, but I'm sure that they'll see it as some sort of indication that all of the other parties are at least doing something towards it. I think the Tories have the least ambitious sort of zero carbon targets, and then Labour is somewhere
in between. By 2050.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tories are by 2050. Labour is by the 2030s. So let's say 2040. And the Greens are 2030. So in 10 years, they want to have a zero carbon country, which would be very hard
to implement.
But it's an admirable goal.
Yeah, well, I guess we have this this kind of debate every time we have a general election. But I tend to see manifestos, particularly the current one, which is seems largely to be around new spending commitments, as more wish lists than actual things that they're going to achieve. Just because they're all saying they'll throw money at healthcare or social care or climate change or whatever, and the numbers do vary. There's different infrastructure plans, but. I mean, I personally haven't really bothered to dig into the detail, just because I see it more as like a, almost like more of an impressionistic thing. Like, this is generally what they want to achieve. So if they get into government, you'll see how effective they are at that. But in terms of the actual numbers, I'm not sure how credible a lot of the numbers are.
I know, but it is kind of something that you don't really know how much it's going to cost or what it's going to require until you actually go and do it. Which is kind of one of the problems with, manifestos in general, really, right? You can pledge, but then you can't really control for external economic factors. You can't control for, war or natural disasters or anything along those lines. For example, the Lib Dems have really clearly laid out how, so they want to get to 80% of electricity from renewables by 2030, and they want to get most of that by taxing people with a frequent flyer levy. So I believe it's like everybody who flies more than once a year would end up paying extra tax on that, on those flights.
That seems reasonable. There was some, I can't remember the details of this stat, but the number of people who fly more than like two times a year is tiny compared to the general population. So you're obviously one of these awful people, Jazza, who's constantly flying around the world every other weekend.
Yeah, I am, and I probably should be taxed for it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this election in general is vindication of some sort for Extinction Rebellion and climate change campaigners. They probably won't see many of these measures as going far enough, but they've clearly turned the dial on that to a significant degree. So, you know, I think there is some achievement there for them. We have on a similar level, Theresa May's government at some point, at several points, said that austerity was over, which basically means that the Tories' commitment to cutting public spending would be no more. And the manifestos at this election seem to have borne that out, at least if you look at what the Tories are promising, what Labour are promising, which is obviously a lot more extravagant, and also what the Lib Dems and the Greens are promising. What do you make of that as a general trend?
I mean, I find it quite frustrating because the Conservatives for the last 9 years, because of their austerity agenda, have buggered up a lot of people's lives with it, frankly. And it's proven that it was just a load of hot air. It was just it doesn't actually mean that the economy is doing better. It's not what the economy needs. It was a philosophical choice that they made to reduce the amount of spending, because as soon as they realize that the public appetite isn't there for it anymore, they reverse ship, and all of a sudden they're like spending money like it's like they're making it rain. And I believe that the Lib Dems are actually the only fully costed manifesto that has been like verified out of the five pan Britain parties, at least.
Yeah,
and that, I mean, but the thing is, people don't care really. People care about how they're going to get beat taxed, and the Conservatives have promised an awful lot but have also said that they're not going to tax people anymore, which means that they're going to be increasing borrowing, which, when they came into power in a coalition in 2010, that was the worst possible thing that a government could do. And they talked about the Labour Party having wrecked the global economy, which obviously we all know isn't true. And I just find the hypocrisy of that politics really frustrating, because it's convenient for them now to say that they're going to spend loads of money on stuff.
Well, this is why the Tories are the most successful party in the world, as I think we were saying a couple of episodes ago.
Because they have no values.
I wouldn't say they have no values. Their values are just flexible. Flexible values. Should we talk about the leaders, actually? I know we've sort of banged on about our misgivings, let's say, about Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn.
Give us a sec. Let's talk about how both of us quite like the Brexit Party.
Okay, I mean, well, I don't want to overstate this, you know. trying to get me into trouble, mate.
I'm in this camp as well. If you've been listening to this podcast for any period of time, you know that Jimmy and I are proper lovers of
constitutional reform.
Yeah. We love that stuff. And who has come out with the most radical constitutional reform in their manifestos of all of the parties? It is the Brexit Party, who front page want to abolish the House of Lords and introduce proportionate representation. And I'm on board. I love that.
Some caveats there. They want to make the voting system more representative. I assume that might mean some form of PR. That might mean something.
Representation is what I read in my head.
Okay, they also want to abolish the House of Lords?
Yes.
They want to make MPs who switch parties subject to recall petitions, which means you can't just change without going to a by-election. Well, at least if enough people sign in your constituency. I assume that's what that means. They want to reform the Supreme Court. Judges who play a role in politics must be subject to political scrutiny. I'm not 100% sure about how that would work in practice, but you know, that is constitutional reform. And they want to make the civil service more accountable to the public, would require civil servant to sign an oath to act with political neutrality. Again, I'm not sure what, you know, what that really means. They're already committed to neutrality in other ways. They want
But then they sign something, it becomes real.
Phase out the BBC licence fee, which is quite controversial, although it's...
But they don't really have an idea of... they haven't said anything about what they're going to replace it with either, suggesting that there wouldn't be one.
Yes, potentially. And they want to require universities to incorporate an obligation to protect legal free speech. Again, not entirely sure how that pans out in practice. And they, but this is a more progressive one. Introduce citizens' initiatives to allow people to call referendums subject to a 5 million threshold of registered voter signatures and time limitations on repeat votes, which is quite similar to what Switzerland has. So, there, I mean, there's some stuff in there which is more like classic right-wing fodder, particularly the BBC licence fee thing, but some of that is very progressive constitutional reform.
I personally agree with about 30% of it.
There you go. I mean, that's reasonably high, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You said actually that Nigel Farage is going to rebrand the Brexit Party as the Reform Party after the general
election. Yeah, that
broke
today. They're going to call it the Reform Party and push for... for kind of like constitutional reform of the UK, which is, I mean, once Brexit is done, why don't I just become a reformer?
I mean, I'm just not sure that's going to have any legs, because as much as I find constitutional reform interesting, it's not quite the red meat to slightly more nationalistic people that I think is what's driven the Brexit Party and UKIP previously.
It makes it seem a lot more, it's a lot more wonky than we have come to expect from Nigel Farage and the parties that he founds and leads.
Yeah, I mean, you said that the Brexit Party is slightly more intellectual than UKIP, which is not saying very much. And it's probably true because, Nigel Farage did try and get a broader sweep of Brexiteers rather than just the nationalistic ones. He also brought on people that were, you know, more libertarianish or more left-leaning, which I think made sense at the time. I just think Nigel Farage is done once, if Brexit is actually enacted under the Tory party, then I don't really see much of a future for him. If it isn't, if it is cancelled in some form, then, you know, I guess he's back in business. But I think, I think we could, this could be Nigel Farage's last general election, Jazza. I know that will hit you very hard.
No, whatever will I do? I don't think you're correct.
You don't?
I don't think this is going to be the end of it for him. He continues to animate a base who love him and speak and claim to speak for people, and does actually people will say that he speaks for them as well. A group of people who have widely been ignored by both parties for such a long time, that kind of like middle who've been abandoned, who have legitimate grievances. This may change under somebody like Boris Johnson, who himself is also very charismatic and seems to be able to get people who are going to be worse off under him to vote for him. but isn't that the joy of politics? I don't know. I think that Nigel Farage will still be around with or without Brexit being enacted.
Yeah, I mean, something that what is striking in the polls is if you look at the sort of the progress of Labour and Tories, which have both increased their polling, they're currently standing at 42% for the Tories and 33% for Labour. If you're taking averages, this is from the Britain Elects website, via the New Statesman. But if you look at Labour and the Tories, they've gone up in almost exact proportion to how the Brexit Party and the Lib Dems have gone down.
We're seeing again, in the same way that we did in 2017, a return to the two major parties, and I think we're going to see the vast majority of votes being cast to those, to the Conservatives and Labour, this time again. But that is the nature of our voting system.
So this seems like a reasonable point to get to some sort of predictions, I think. I've obviously read out
We're not going to talk about the leaders.
We can turn back to leaders for a second.
Isn't it sad that and this was a quite horrible bit of the Andrew Neil interview with Joe Swinson, the leader of the Lib Dems, isn't it quite sad
that it's true that the more people see of her, the less they like her.
I'm going to reveal my who I voted for by process of elimination here, but I didn't vote for the Lib Dems. But I think that Jo Swinson, of the leaders available, is probably the best one. You know, if you look at, she's certainly better than Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn. She is somebody who I would far more trust to run. Basically,
she's she's a more traditional politician.
Well, she just doesn't seem bonkers, and she doesn't. You know, she hasn't just said any like racist shit in the last 20 years. Admittedly, she's 38, so she's had a less storied history than Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn.
She's been an MP since her mid 20s as well. She was a very young MP.
Yeah, she has been an MP for a while, but she, you know, the amount of like sludge that people have been able to dredge up on her, as far as I can work out, has been very limited, apart from she has been criticised for voting for austerity when she was part of the Lib Dem Tory coalition, which I think is legitimate. When you're part of a coalition, you know, if you want that coalition to continue, you have to vote for the government's programme.
Yeah, you have to vote for the government. Yeah.
That's how that works. So even though she was hammered on the Andrew Neil interview, and there have been like, there's been a lot of kind of left-wing journalists or activists sort of saying, oh, she's, you know, she voted for austerity, she's a nasty person. You know, I just look at her and I think, yeah, she just seems, you know, this is purely a gut instinct thing, but she just seems like a more salubrious character to actually run the country than the other two. So, but people, as you say, you know, people do seem to have reacted badly to her. If you look at how the Lib Dems have been polling anyway, that would partly suggest that, I think. And people, you know, people have found her like a bit overbearing. I mean, the word bossy is often used.
I do love sexism, don't you?
The thing is, some women come across as bossy in the same way some men come across as bossy.
Jimmy, when have you ever heard a man described as bossy or a boy described as bossy? It is an adjective that is used exclusively to put down women and girls generally.
I see what you're saying. I'm just saying we shouldn't stop calling bossy women bossy. We should just start calling bossy men bossy. Like, that's where the problem is here, is that people don't look at overbearing male politicians and say, yeah, you just seem,
it's
like,
it's seen as strength though, and that's and we should call that sexism, don't you think?
I agree with the point you're making. I just think that some of the characteristics that people, you know, people are more likely to label men and women in certain ways.
It is still a negative
ways.
Characteristic, yeah.
And I just think that we should just label, if people have negative characteristics, people should just be more willing to label them, you know, whatever the sex is. That's all I'm saying. So, I mean, I feel that, I don't know, there are definitely some negative adjectives that tend to be applied to men more than women. Like the whole thing about macho posturing. You never hear, like, effeminate posturing, if you know what I mean, which can be a thing. I think, you know, women can. Yeah, so like this is something that I just brings to mind, but I think it was after the Joe Cox murder, but Stella Creasy was on Question Time. It probably wasn't the Joe Cox murder, it's probably something else. It was probably some disaster that had just happened, and Stella Creasy was on Question Time, and she was like, oh, I don't think we can talk about this because it's so emotionally raw and I'm going to get like upset or whatever. And that is something that I don't think a man could have said, like, with any credibility.
No, but men do get away with saying that sometimes.
Do
and it's seen as a man, and a man will often get praised for that kind of behavior, for being so brave to be in touch with his emotional side.
I can't think of a situation like that. You're probably right. There are always exceptions to these things. I think there are general rules, but there are definitely exceptions as well. But yeah, I think, you know, whether Jeremy Corbyn ends up as Prime Minister or Boris Johnson, I don't think we're putting our best candidates for. I think this country could probably do better.
Jo Swinson. Also, so apparently the fight in her race in East Dumbartonshire, West Dumbartonshire,
somewhere in Scotland,
somewhere in the south of Scotland, she might
be knocked out of office. Yeah, she might lose her seat,
which will be pretty bloody bad, I think.
I mean, it would cap off what has generally been regarded as a failed campaign, I think. Which I think is harsh.
Why do you think it has failed to resonate?
I think it's failed to resonate because the Lib Dems fundamentally have a harder gig than the Tories and Labour. There was somebody was a Lib Dem, a senior Lib Dem source in the jargon, was quoted on Twitter as saying, "Oh, we should have won 100 seats in this election." I'm like, "What are you talking about? That's just wildly unrealistic." You know, when you are like the Lib Dems, I can't remember when this was. This was decades ago. In one election, I want to say during the 70s. They came like very, very close to getting a similar percentage of votes as Labour, but because they were all in the wrong seat.
You're thinking the SDP.
It might have been the Liberal SDP Alliance. Yeah. But they got loads and loads of votes, but they got barely any seats because you know our system is very, very friendly to incumbents and very, very unfriendly to outsiders. The Lib Dems.
Well, it was similar in 2010. I think the Lib Dems got something like 20% of the vote, and Labour got 24%.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I need to get this up.
2010 election results. Lib Dems were 23, Labour were 29.
You're talking about 2010?
Yep.
Is that right? Oh yeah, you're right. Jesus. Yeah, BBC. Sorry. I was looking at the seats, but yeah, you're totally right.
Oh yeah, and that translated 23 to 29 translated to 57,258.
That's what I mean, you know, like Jo Swinson could have had like an amazing campaign and still like if she'd got 50, 60 seats, that would have been an amazing result for the Lib Dems. As it stands, it looks like she's, you know, they're going to retain what they've got, like 15 seats or something like that at the moment.
I think including people who've converted, they're close to 20 now.
Oh, is it close to 20? Well, if they retain the number of seats they have, you know, that's obviously a disappointing election for them, but it's not a disaster. I just think she's got a difficult task and, you know, people have been hostile to it. And I think that, you know, as evinced by those, if you look at the polling over time, they were doing quite well a couple, like back in October, they were about 20% and Labour were 24% at the start of October. People are probably voting tactically, I think. People are looking at the Tories and Labour and they're like, these are the only credible governments and therefore we're going to vote accordingly, which I think is sensible, but is obviously works very much against the Lib Dems. I don't think it has gone as badly as people say. I just think that she's starting from a much harder base than the other two main parties.
I think also the revoke policy, the not going to a second referendum, just allowed Labour to step into that space a lot more. I think that's one of the silliest things that Lib Dems did. And I know that it's a negotiating stance for any kind of like negotiations that they would do with coalitions or supply and demand agreements with other parties. But I think that really hurt them. It narrowed off their base and made them seem less reasonable, actually, when actually they're probably the most reasonable party running at the moment.
Well, on a personal level, I'd have been tempted to vote for the Lib Dems, but because of that policy, I don't. It even says at the start of their manifesto, it says a vote for the Lib Dems is a vote to stop Brexit. And I thought, well, fair enough, I can't vote for you then.
What speaks to you in the Lib Dem manifesto aside from all of the Brexit stuff?
It's less what's in the manifesto, to be honest with you. It's more just a general sense that they're not as callous as the Tories, which implies they are somewhat callous. I don't trust the Tories to actually, you know, if you look at the Tories' record over the last almost 10 years it is now, their attitude to welfare reforms, as you've already mentioned, and public services, I just don't. Whatever they say that they're going to do to help like vulnerable people, I just don't trust them. Whereas I do trust the Lib Dems. And I don't really blame them for their record in the coalition government, because I think that's how coalitions work. I trust them more than Labour, because I just think that Labour is run by people who don't, necessarily have a realistic view of how the world works. That's partly just my cynicism getting into play. But the Lib Dems dispositionally seem to be a sensible compromise between that. They're like, you know, the steady on their party, aren't they? They're not going to do anything. Their hearts seem to be in the right place, which actually puts them more in a similar category to Labour, but they're not just going to try crazy things that don't aren't necessarily well thought out, if you put it that way. So to me, they seem like the more sensible party in that respect. But as you know, as you say, their Brexit policy nullified that really for me. I'll probably vote for them again at some point, just not this general election.
Fair. Should we get on to the big reveal?
The big reveal. So, as I say, you have 4 days left to decide who you're going to vote for. Have you already made your decision?
Well, Jimmy, you've already done it. You voted by post. So why don't you go first?
So I actually decided to go for the Green Party in the end.
My God, interesting man.
Partly just to throw people off, you know. I'm just tired of being accused of being right wing all the time, so I thought let's just go for the most left wing party on the sheet.
I love that.
But that's not seriously why I did it.
No, but I really want it to be.
So my reasoning, and you know, I'm not going to pretend that I went through the manifestos line by line and was like, okay, this is, you know, the best thing if I tot up all the numbers on the pros and cons column. But I just think in some ways it's quite a negative vote because I don't want to vote for the Tories for reasons previously mentioned. I just see Labour, I don't see them as particularly credible as a government because I just think the ideology of their leadership, plus the anti-Semitism at all, which isn't great. And then you have the Lib Dems and their Brexit policy, which I can't really get on board with. The Green Party policy re Brexit is actually quite similar to Labour in that they're going to campaign for a second referendum and then they're going to campaign to remain in that referendum, which obviously I'd still vote Leave if a second referendum came up, preferably with a deal. But that for me was like an acceptable compromise, really. And the fact that they actually they are the most serious party about tackling the climate change crisis, to me, that is a massive positive. And they also, you know, despite their stance on Brexit and the second referendum, which I do see as democratically a bit shady, they are, you know, maybe other than the Brexit party, they're the most passionate about constitutional reform. I mean, they probably are more interested in constitutional reform. And they do say in their section about Brexit that they would it sounds like I'm canvassing for the Greens.
It does now. I'm loving this.
It says that if they remained in Europe they would campaign to make it more democratically accountable, which for me was the major reason I voted Leave anyway. So the Brexit policy, even though it's exactly what I want, is sort of okay, and then a lot of the other stuff that they talk about in terms of climate change is good. They do have some slightly dubious policies in there. I think the one around universal basic income, I'm not entirely persuaded that it's better than having targeted benefits for people. Like, I personally don't need a universal basic income.
Good for you.
Well, you probably don't. You don't need it either, to be honest. Like, and probably, you know, a fair few people listening to this podcast don't need universal basic income. And money that you give to us is money that you don't give to other people who need it more. Which I think ethically is a problem with universal basic income. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure they've costed it properly. I don't really believe them. So they do have that slight...
Well, it's like £89...
A week.
A week? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, there is something to be said for not having means-tested benefits because of the administrative costs and all of that sort of thing. And I can't remember all of their slightly kookier policies, but it is the Greens, so there's definitely some in there. So go check out the manifesto yourself if you don't believe me.
Wowzers.
Yeah, so that's what I've done.
I was not expecting that. That is the twist of the century. forget about Endgame. This is the most elation and the nice tying up of a storyline that I've ever heard. Jimmy's gone from Lib Dem to Brexit Party to Greens.
Yes, I have. So just going for the weirdest voting trajectory. I think I'm on course at the moment.
Excellent. Very proud of you.
So, that being revealed, who are you going to vote for?
I still don't know.
Oh, dear. This is why you wanted me to say first.
Yes. So I've talked about this before. I live in a very, very safe Labour seat. At the last election, my Member of Parliament got 60% of the vote, which is pretty much as safe as you can be, really.
I live in a pretty similar seat in that respect. Mine is also very safe Labour.
And I kind of wish that I was in a marginal constituency of some type.
Don't we all, Jazza? Isn't that the dream?
Yeah, I know. I am torn between Labour, the Greens and the Lib Dems.
So the only one you've ruled out are the Tories. The only ones you've ruled out are the Tories, the Brexit Party and any other randomness.
And the Christian People's Alliance Party. Don't forget
that. They're also standing in my seat as well.
Mm-hmm. And the Communities United Party?
Are Independent Group for Change standing in your party?
No Tiggers for me.
Are UKIP standing in your constituency?
No, they are not, no.
No, okay, well, that's disappointing, but I suppose you'll have to make do.
I feel a similar way to how I felt in 2015, where I was like, it doesn't matter how I vote, so I may as well spoil my ballot. And I felt that way until literally the moment I stepped into the polling station, and I then kind of like had an epiphany, and I realized, well, there is a party that I agree with, and there is a party that wants to change the system, so I may as well. It's literally just sending a letter off into the void. It's throwing a message in a bottle that nobody's going to read. Is how I feel about voting at the moment. On voting in a constituency that is a 60% of a particular party, because I have no representative, frankly. Woe is me, boo. I don't know. I will either spoil my ballot, or I will vote Lib Dem or Green. Who knows?
So you don't think you're going to vote Labour then?
No, I don't think that I can. Part of me really likes the idea of tipping over the apple cart a little bit, and really, we didn't really talk about their manifesto very much, but what they're proposing is a really different economic system. And part of me is like, you know what? Why not? Everything else is on fire. Let's put up some nice pictures while the house is on
Jazz
fire.
Jazz is becoming Brexiteer. This is a nightmare. What have I done?
That leadership, I can't consciously. It's not just anti-Semitism, and I think that's used as a foil against him probably a bit too frequently. I don't think it's Jeremy Corbyn's fault, but I think he's a crap leader. And I would have real problems with having him as our representative internationally on like the world stage, or somebody with history on the world stage. So it would realistically be between the Lib Dems and the Greens. You know what? We will see.
His Corbyn's foreign policy stance for me is also, I didn't mention this at the time, but it's a major reason why I can't really bring myself to vote for him. I know a lot of people do think that the would describe his reports of his associations with terrorists as smears or whatever. But I think even if you disbelieve that, it's fairly.
Well, but there are photos.
There are photos. There's records. There's there was a story that came out about him. I think minimizing some of what went on in Bosnia during the 90s, in terms of ethnic violence. And he's someone who has consistently sided with whoever Britain and the US as well is fighting against at any given time. And I find it very strange that a man like that would want to lead the UK, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
He didn't.
Well, yeah.
It was a big mistake.
Look, we've all inadvertently got jobs that we didn't really want and weren't really prepared to do, and then felt embarrassed about it and just done them for a long time. We've all been there, right? You just send off your application, you don't expect anything to come of it, and then the next thing you know...
And then it's the only thing that comes back, and so it's like, well, I guess I am the social media manager for Greggs now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
This is how our crazy economy works. Yeah, I mean, I think people saying that his economic system will definitely fail, I'm not super convinced about that. I think that there is some stuff that they will do that will work better than what the Tories have on offer. Some of the stuff will fail, but then, you know, there's stuff in all of these manifestos that wouldn't work if it was put into practice. I know that might sound a little bit flippant, but I think people that are really, really sure that, you know, this policy or these collections of policies will have this effect, I just think should be a bit more, what's the word? Humble in their predictions, let's say. I don't think Corbyn or the team he's assembled around him should be in office, but the Labour manifesto per se, I'm not aggressively against, I don't think, certainly not on the domestic side.
Speaking about being humble in predictions.
Oh, no.
as this is our last podcast before the election, do you want to predict anything?
Well, you know me, Jazza. I usually just look at the polls and just pick the midpoint of the polls and go, that's probably what happened. And I'm not going to disappoint. If you look at the polls as they currently are, the mid range of the spread of what the polls are when you consider the margins of error and that sort of thing, is pointing towards a solid Tory majority. I think it's fair to say we're recording this on Sunday the 8th of December, so and there's more polling yet to come, so perhaps nearer the day it won't look like that. But I think that's the most likely outcome. I'm not going to bother assigning percentages to it because I would just be plucking numbers out my arse. But a lot of the commentary around this has suggested that it's very, very possible, particularly because there's some signs that the vote is more volatile than it has been previously, and there's more don't knows than there have been previously, that it will end up with another hung parliament, which means that all this will have been for nothing and people have got very vexed and very angry for no good reason. Or it will end up with a Tory landslide, in which case the next 5 years is going to be interesting, I think we can say.
Yeah, well, so well done, Jimmy. When asked for a prediction, you managed to give all of the possible outcomes. So,
I think that, well, that's how you should make predictions, is give probabilities for things. I think that a Labour majority is off the table, to be honest with you. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, almost.
I think it would be... At the very least, you'd have to give it a very, very low probability of turning up at this stage, just because the polls just suggest that they're not going to get a majority. They might end up forming a coalition or coming up with some other deal with the SNP and possibly the Lib Dems, or whoever else is around. But I think Corbyn is going to fail to win an election again. I don't know. I mean, is it possible that the Labour might end up with the most seats, or do you think the Tories will end up with the most seats and Labour will just end up forming a government?
I would be very surprised if Labour got more seats than the Conservatives.
Yeah.
What I think is up for grabs is there being some kind of not coalition but a supply and demand agreement that keeps a minority. Of a minority from the Conservatives out of power. I worry what that means politically for the country, but you know what? Welcome to the UK in the 2010s. What I think is going to happen is a slim Conservative majority. Maybe like there was the YouGov multi-regressional something poll that like 100,000 participants, and they extrapolated that to the constituencies to try and more accurately predict what the result would be in each of the seats rather than a nationwide poll, because of the voting system we have. Last time we mentioned that, I promise. And they predicted like a 60 seat majority for the Conservatives.
Yeah.
And that was like a week ago. And the polls have tightened.
They have, yeah.
I think we'll probably see something very similar to what we see now, but in terms of kind of like Conservatives' largest party, Labour in second. I think it's going to be closer in terms of the Conservatives getting a majority than many people perhaps expect.
Mm. And that the Tories don't need a massive majority, do they? If they get a solid majority, don't. That'll probably be enough.
Yeah, they don't need a massive majority to get through the Johnson deal.
Yeah,
but they do need a relatively strong majority to govern for 5 years.
That is true. Although one of the upshots of Boris Johnson having got rid of 20, withdrawn the whip from 21 MPs who were rebelling against him over Brexit, is that those people largely did not stand. I'm not sure if all of them didn't stand for the Tory party.
But they may agree with they. But they've all pledged to agree with him on the Brexit question.
Mm.
But that's one thing. And you highlighted this as a problem with having a general election around a single question. Maybe he gets a majority and he can pass that through. But that is the first 10% of his next term. 5 year term maximum of parliament.
Mm.
We may see yet more arguing chaos.
Yep, I think that is very possible. so stay tuned, I think.
Stay tuned. Any Right to Sunrule listeners who are looking for something to do on Thursday night, I hear there's an election happening and I'll be live streaming it on my YouTube channel.
My God.
There you go, very exciting. Jimmy won't be there because he hates me.
I'm otherwise engaged. You know, I've got other shit on, mate.
That's fine. Whatever.
I'll probably tweet some shit at you throughout the night, though, so you can read out my tweets. It'll almost be like I'm in there in person.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah, beautiful.
Excellent.
And if you want a spoiler of who's going to win the general election, apparently YouGov are going to release a final MRP poll. So it's one of those. I assume it's one of those constituency polls on December 10th. And then you can, be ahead of the game.
Great. Can't wait.
Beautiful. All right. Let's wrap it up there. And if whatever happens, we'll do at least one more episode before the end of the year. Give you our incredibly informed thoughts on what has happened.
Don't undersell us. We're very well informed. All right, then. Follow us on Twitter at Right Just Honourable. I am at Just John on all social media because I'm a good internet boy. Mm. And Jimmy is JDE Nichols on but one platform.
Only on Twitter. All right. Bye bye.
Toodaloo.